Thank you for having me. Thank you for spending your day off, those of you who have a day off.
I don't know. This is one of these holidays. Some people are working and some people aren't. And I see people here who are working today. So thank you for taking your mornings, whether you're working or not, to spend some time learning with us today. Thank you. It's such an honor to be here. And I've heard so much about this shul. I walked in shul, city, call it, I'm not sure what to call it. There's like minyanim going on everywhere here. There's so many things going on here. And it's especially my honor to be here. I work closely with Rav Shai Schechter. And thank you for sharing him with us. You've added such a dimension to our campus, to our students. We've had so many, not just the teaching, but we've had so many special guests that have come and shared their experiences. You've been bringing in people from Israel who have experienced different situations, whether it's hostage families or chayalim's families, and just what you've added by bringing those guests to our campus for our students has been tremendous. And really a very impactful, formative part of our experience since October 7th on campus. So I have tremendous hakarat hatov to Rav Shai Schechter for everything that he's brought to us and to our community. So I figured we would talk about Torah learning. If I'm feeling this, I mean, we're all feeling this. We're all feeling a little bit disconnected, or a little more than a little bit disconnected. And, since October 7th, we're not in Israel. We don't have kids. Maybe some of us here have kids who are fighting in Sahel. You know, we have friends' kids. We have, we feel very connected to communities there. And but there's also a disconnect. It's also hard. We're far away. We're not as involved as people are in Israel. And the truth is, people in Israel feel this as well. So what do? So we turn towards Torah. You know, we try to make our learning meaningful. I mean, there's a lot of other things we can do. There's a lot of activism we can do, and there's a lot of outreach. And we also turn towards learning. So the question is, why? What's the connection? Why do we turn towards learning? You know, we talk about learning Torah, and I think that we don't often really make the connection between learning Torah and our relationship with Hashem. Because ultimately what we're doing is we're turning to our connection to Hashem to get us through this. And I wanted to start out with two stories, just to introduce this point. As our Axelrod said, I aside from being the Associate Dean of Torah Studies in Stern College, which means I oversee the academic Jewish studies and what I like to call the seminary part of Stern, which is the learning that goes out on outside of the classrooms as well, and you can get a sense of it next Sunday. We're going to be talking about this a little bit, this topic of Talmud Torah during turbulent times. So I'm giving you the intro for that. I'm just going to be moderating a panel on this topic next week. Emir Tzashem. So one of the things that I do in addition is I run the Machina program. I started and run the Machina program. It's a program for students who are coming from little to no formal Jewish educational backgrounds, non-religious families. And I want to just tell you about this student I have. I had. Her name is Rachel. And she came from a different background. She actually grew up Catholic. You know, most of my students just grow up in non-religious families. In fact, 2 weeks ago, we had a panel, a Machina panel, and our Machina students got to share with the rest of the population what their backgrounds are, where they're coming from, what their experience in CERN was like. It was incredible. And I asked them to end with a message they'd like to share with the students, and, you know, students from the typical, you know, religious backgrounds, and it was very powerful. You know, one student got up and she said, "This was such a battle for me to come here, and you don't understand, you know, you all roll your eyes and you say, oh, we're in a bubble." She said, "The bubble's beautiful. I've never been in the bubble before." And I want everybody to text your parents after this and thank them for sending you to Stern College, because maybe you took it for granted, but you shouldn't. It was very powerful. Anyway, so every so often I have a student who's coming from a non-Jewish background who's going through Geirus, and we've gone through some interesting Geirus experiences. So, in fact, one girl recently, I just have to share this because you guys would appreciate it. One student recently was going through Geirus, and I've been working with her. And then I work with the Beis Din of America, which is the Beis Din at YU. It's Rabbi Willig and Rabbi Rapp and Rabbi Ram. And And at the end of this, you know, at the end of the Gayrus, she goes through, it's like a 2.5 meeting. They're, you know, basically interview. They're asking her a ton of questions about what she's learned, why she wants to convert. And at the end, they said to her, okay, you know, it was very comprehensive. You know, is there anything that we didn't ask you that you'd like us to know? Is there anything you'd like to share with us? And she said, yes, there's something that I know that you didn't ask me, and I want you to know that I know. And Rabbi Willig said, what is that? And she said, I know the 5 towns, Woodmere, Lawrence, Cedars. And I'm thinking, oh, that's good, because I couldn't name all 5. But people think I live in West Hempstead, but I live in New Hempstead. But anyway, so I had this girl, Rachel, and she was actually a very fascinating young woman. She was about 14 years old. She was in Catholic school, and she said, you know, I learned every day, you know, we would start the day saying how much we love God. We love God, we love God. She said, but no one ever told me how to love God. Like, we had to start the day saying we love God, and we always had to express how much we love God, but no one ever told me how to do that. She said she was about 14 years old, and she Googled how to have a relationship with God. And the first thing that came up was a shiur on Wayu Torah. And it was a shiur on Wayu Torah based on the Rambam about, it was one of the Rosh Yeshiva Wayu, and talking about, you know, what is Yediyat Hashem, knowledge of God, and how that's connected to Ahavat Hashem, love of God, and she was blown away. So this 14-year-old Catholic girl from Sussex County, New Jersey, is listening to Wayu Torah shiurim, and she was blown away, and she said, this is what I've been looking for. She said, this is how to have a relationship to God. I need to learn Torah. You know, unfortunately, it's the wrong God, you know? So she said, so she went to her local reform rabbi in Sussex County, New Jersey, and said, Rabbi, I want to convert. And he said, no, you don't. And she said, no, I do. And he said, well, come, you know, first of all, you're a little young, you know, figure this out on your own. And second of all, if you do want to do this, I'm the wrong person for you. And then he connected her with another rabbi. And then she said, hey, what's turning me on to Judaism, what's interesting me in Judaism is YU Torah. I should go to YU where all these people are teaching. So anyway, she shows up at YU and then she went through Gayrus. So, it's actually a fascinating story. Right before her conversion, she called me. And she said, Mrs. Schechter, are you home? I live in Muncie, New Hempstead, but that's by Muncie. And I said, yes, why? She said, well, I'm shopping with my father in Evergreen for Christmas dinner, and he wants to meet you. And I'm like, that, you know, Evergreen's like a Hasidic grocery. Like, you know, I never heard that before. So I said, sure. And I was a little nervous. I didn't mention that her father is a police chief in Sussex County, New Jersey, and his daughter was like finishing conversion. So, you know, changing teams over here. And so he came, you know, so he shows up at my door, and I answer the door, and he comes in, and he gives me Mrs. Schechter. He gives me a big hug, and she looks at him like, Dad, you know, I told you not. And he's like, oh, right, I wasn't supposed to do that, right? And she's like, no, Dad. And he looks at me, it's okay, I'm not Jewish. It's like, okay, I don't know if it works that way. And then I said to him, I said, you know, it's really amazing that you've been so supportive of your daughter, and, you know, she's taking on something different than what she was raised with. And he said, Mrs. Schechter, I've been a police chief for 40 years, and I've seen kids rebel and end up on drugs and end up OD'd and end up pregnant and end up dead. It's like, if my daughter is going to rebel by taking on Jewish values and giving me nice Jewish grandchildren with these Jewish values, I can live with that. I'm like, now I want to hug you, you know? So anyway, so that's story number one. So, you know, the idea that, you know, how to have a relationship with Hashem is through Torah. And I know that doesn't sound like such a chiddush, but we don't necessarily think about that. We go to our shiurim, we go to class, you have to take your Chumash class, but do people really think that that there's this correlation between learning Torah, and not just a correlation, but the way to have a relationship with Hashem is through Torah? Story number two, when I was in high school, I went to Frisch High School. When we were in 11th grade, it was, I'm dating myself here, it was towards the end of communist Russia, the communist era. And I had this very meaningful, formative opportunity to go to the former Soviet Union and you know, teach Torah, basically, and meet refuseniks and teach Torah. And one of the people that we met, it was such a formative experience for me. I don't think I would be what I'm doing now and who I am and have an appreciation for Torah in that way if I hadn't met people that were really moser nefesh for Torah. You know, and you see what people are ready to sacrifice just to learn a parsha shir from an 11th grader. It's like, you don't come back and cut chumash class again. I didn't mean again. Not that I usually, but you know, first was in Paramus, and there were one day sales in Macy's across the highway. I'm just saying. So one of the people that I met was somebody in Leningrad, which is now St. Petersburg, but it was Leningrad back then. His name was Vladimir Lifshitz. And Vladimir Lifshitz, and whatever, this is another time I'll tell you more stories about that. But the way that we got to people and the way we got in touch with people when we were there, we didn't have cell phones. It's amazing. My parents let me go on this thing. But so we met this guy, Vladimir Lifshitz, who was giving a shiur. And we definitely, as 11th graders, having gone to yeshiva, we knew more than he did. But we went to his apartment, and there was a shomer outside the door to make sure, you know, it wasn't the KGB. Putin was in the KGB at the time when I was there. Maybe he was even the head of it. I'm just saying, I'm not making a political statement at all. But anyway, so there was a shomer there to make sure that we weren't the secret police, and you know, said something like shalom, and we said aleichem, and he's like, okay, you're good, you can come in. And we went to this shiur, and it was amazing. There was a shiur in an apartment in Leningrad, and this Vladimir Lifshitz was giving this shiur, and we participated, and we took over a little bit, And then at the end, I said, you know, we were talking to him afterwards, and he said, and we said to him, you know, like, why are you doing this? You know, he said, well, because he was telling us a little bit. I said, how long have you been doing this? And he said, well, we've been doing, he said, I've been doing it only like 2 months, not even, almost about 6 weeks. This year has been going on for a long time. He said, but the problem is that, you know, everybody keeps getting arrested. You know, the KGB comes in every couple weeks, and then they arrest the person giving the shiur. And then the next guy, you know, starts, you know, when he gets arrested, then the guy who, you know, who's the most involved is the one who takes over. And he's like, so when I get arrested, you see the guy in the front row who was asking all the questions, he's going to be the one to take over. I took over for a guy named Alex Zelichonok, who was arrested, you know, 6 weeks ago. So when he got arrested, I took over. And we're looking at this guy, and we're like, why are you doing this? Why are you doing this? Like, you know you're going to get arrested. You know you're going to get in trouble for this. Why don't you just, why are you getting together like this? And he said to us, he says, how else are we supposed to learn Torah? We're like, do it on your own. You know, do it on your own. Why do you have to get together in a group? And he says, if you do it on your own, he says, come on, you know, you're not going to do it. Like, we support each other. We need to be here all together. Because if we're not learning Torah, how are we supposed to have a relationship with Hashem in communist Russia if we're not learning Torah? So that was very formative for me as well, and very impactful, because it kind of changed my whole perspective. Like, oh, that's why we have Chumash class. And I know it's, again, it doesn't sound like a chiddush, but to talk about that relationship with Hashem that's so intricately connected to our learning, I think is very important to talk about. I was once giving a course in Stern College on Hakdamot. A bunch of years ago, just Hakdamot of the Mefarshim. And most Mefarshim have a Hakdamot to Torah. Some have a Hakdamot to each individual Sefer. Some have a Hakdamot to their entire Perish. And it bothered me when I was preparing this course that Rashi doesn't have an introduction. Rashi was like one of the first ones to systematically go through Parshanut and explain things, doesn't have an introduction. Like the Ramban gives a whole introduction to Torah and then each individual Sefer. And it's not like Rashi doesn't have a methodology. He can explain the methodology to us. But he explains the methodology when it comes up. Like he'll discuss, you know, Pshuto Shel Mikra when it comes up, or Ein Mukdam Mochar BaTorah, which doesn't mean there's no order in the Torah. It means there's not necessarily chronological order in the Torah. It's definitely order. It might be thematic, not a chronological. Side point. Anyway, so it comes up when it comes up, but he doesn't, you would think that, you know, like anybody writing something or writing a parish or writing something, you know, nonfiction would explain why they're doing what they're doing. And Rashi doesn't do that. And then it struck me that I think Rashi does do that, although not officially. And the first five sources here, sources 1 through 5, are Rashi's, the first Rashi of each of the five, Chamisha Chumshei Torah. Okay, and we're not going to go through it really in detail. I mean, just very, very briefly. The first Rashi in Breishit, Aleph Aleph, Rashi asks the famous question, Amar Rabbi Yitzchak, lo ya tzarich latchil tatarah, ele mechodesh hazel lachem, shemitzvah rishona, shenitzavu ba Yisrael, mata'am patach bibreishit. Rashi says, why does the Torah begin with creation of the world? Why not the first mitzvah, which is in Perek Yudbet, which is Rosh Chodesh in Parshat Bo. So what's the reason they started with Bereishit? And Rashi's response is, well, because Hashem has a relationship with Bnei Yisrael, and he wants to protect Bnei Yisrael's kavod, because he doesn't want people to accuse B'nai Israel of stealing Eretz Israel. So he wants to establish the fact that he's the creator of the world. And if Hashem is the creator of the world, then that means that he's the owner of the world. And that means he could give whatever land he wants to whoever he gives it to. And that's why he's establishing ownership of the world by starting with creation of the world. Again, this doesn't hold up in the UN, this argument, but it's good for us. And we know that this Eretz Israel belongs to us because Hashem gave it to us, and Hashem is allowed to give it to us because he created the world and he's the owner, so he has ownership of it. So he gid la'amo. Exactly. Not he gid la'un, he gid la'amo. Correct. Rashi, first Rashi in Sefer Shemot. Rashi asks in Sefer Shemot, Ve'el Shemot B'nei Israel, Af al pi sheman'an b'chayim b'shmotam, chazar u'man'an b'mintatam. Why, Rashi asks, are we counting B'nei Israel again? We know from the end of Bereishit, the B'nei Israel who came to Mitzrayim. Why? L'hodiyach chibatam. To show Hashem's love for B'nai Israel, and that's why he's counting them. The first Rashi in Vayikra, Vayikra Moshe, L'chol dibrot, L'chol amirot, L'chol tzivuim, kadma kriya. Why does he have to say, why does that first pasuk in Vayikra need to be there? It seems to be redundant. Just say what Hashem is saying to B'nai Israel as it starts in the second pasuk, but it starts with kriya, lashon kriya. Vayikra is a little more highfalutin language, a little fancier, because again, you know, just to give a little background to Vayikra, Vayikra is the Sefer, I like to call it the how-to manual, how to use this Mishkan we just built to connect to Hashem, and the theme is Kedusha, all different types of Kedusha, how to connect to Hashem. So before all the different laws, Hashem wants to start with this fancier language of Kriya, because we're talking about a Sefer of how to connect to Hashem, and therefore we're starting with Kriya. Why? Lashon Chiba, because it's a language of love, because Hashem loves B'nai Israel. You see the pattern here. Sefer Bamidbar, the first Rashi of Bamidbar, Vayidaber Bamidbar Sinai, why is Moshe counting B'nai Israel? Hashem tells Moshe, Se'u et Rosh Kol Adat B'nai Israel, at the beginning of Bamidbar, Mitoch Chibatam Lefanav Moneh Atam Kol Sha'ah. Because he loves them, he counts them every minute. And then finally, in Dvarim, Ela Dvarim, the beginning of Dvarim, without giving a whole background in Dvarim, you know, Moshe starts Sefer Dvarim giving Tochacha, rebuking B'nai Israel, why they're here. The beginning of Dvarim begins the way that Bamidbar begins. They're on the threshold of entering Eretz Israel. They're about to go into Eretz Israel. However, it's the second generation because the first generation messed up with the Meraglim. So Moshe's going through the history, the beginning of, before he starts doing Mishnah Torah and going through the Torah, view of Torah, he gives a little bit, he digresses a little bit and just tells B'nai Israel what all the sins were that the previous generation did, and why they're here 38 and a half years later, and they haven't been in Eretz Israel yet. So lefishem divrei tochachot umanakan kol mekamot shechizu lefnei hamakom b'em lefikach satam et hadvarim v'hizkiram beremez mipnei kvodan shel Yisrael. He's hinting at certain things, like he'll mention places, but he won't say exactly what B'nai Israel did, because he loves B'nai Israel and he's protecting their kavod. This, to me, was amazing. Maybe this isn't a chiddush to you, because I knew the first Rashi of every Sefer, but I never actually put it together. And I don't think it's a coincidence that the first Rashi of every Sefer talks about Hashem's love for the Jewish people. I think that's Rashi's introduction to Torah. I think that's Rashi's way of telling us, you know what, I'll tell you about my methodology when I get there. The methodology is important. But the number one thing that's most important is, why are we doing this? This is all about a relationship with Hashem. This is ultimately why we're doing this. And I tell my students this, and I'll just share one mashal that I use with my students, and then we'll continue on here. My students, especially the Machina students, ask me, like, why do we need, like, 5,000 different explanations of the same thing? You know, because I'm trying to teach them, like, an introduction to Parshanut. All my students, the advanced students also. You know, my source sheets go through, you know, one question, and we have 25 different explanations on one thing. And my disclaimer is always, for every one I have here, there's 100 more. So why do we do this? And especially when you're trying to follow and take notes and there's a final, you know, I want them to learn Torah, that's the bottom line, you know, like, just tell us what the answer is. How could this be right and this be right? You know, if they both say different things, and I'm like, you're also right, coming from Tevye, right? There's so many different explanations. Why do we super analyze everything? So I like to give them the following mashal, which I think resonates. I say to them, well, not with the Machina students, but certainly with the advanced students also, like, let's say you just spent the summer working in Camp Hask, right? You know what we call Hask, right? Halachically approved Shidduch Camp. I can say that I have a daughter who met her husband in Camp Hask, right? I'm officially the mother of a halachically approved Shidduch, you know, result, Baruch Hashem. So what happens? You went to Camp Hask in the summer, and there was a guy, and you were, you know, eyeing him, and he's like back from Shana Bet Shalavim, theoretically, of course,
And you're kind of interested, but you know, you're not really dating yet. He's not really dating yet.
And then you come back after the summer, and a couple months go by, and all of a sudden you get a text from him. I thought this wouldn't happen because he'd go through the shotgun or whatever. But you get a text, and he says, like, "Hey, Rachel, I'd love to hang out with you soon." Smiley face emoji, Josh, right? What do you do with that text? You show it to your 5,000 closest friends, and hopefully your mom, right? Maybe your dad, too, no offense. And you say, "Okay, what does this mean?" He said, "Hey." He didn't say "dear." He said, "I'd love to hang out with you soon." He said "love." He doesn't say "like." What does that mean? What does hangout mean? Is hangout like you want to just get together with me? Is hangout like the whole chevra? Is hangout when we have the reunion, we could like wave to each other? You know, what does soon mean? Is soon like, yeah, in a few months when we have that reunion, we can, you know, maybe wave to each other? Is soon like, yeah, like maybe next week we should go out? Is soon I'll meet you outside of Brookdale in 5 minutes? Like, what is smiley face emoji? There's a smiley face. There's no hearts in the eyes. There's no teeth showing. It's a big smile. It's not just a little smile. There's no eyes. The eyes are shut but not open. What does this mean? And why do you do that? And by the way, guys do that also, I think. Why do you do that? Because you care about the relationship. Because it matters to you. Because you want that relationship. That relationship is important. This is, believe me, if the guy bothered you all summer and you didn't want anything to do with him, you would delete it and not show it to anybody. Or maybe say very nicely, "Please stop texting me." But we super analyze it because there's a relationship that you care about. That's how we analyze Torah. We want to know what every word means. We want to know what every letter means because that's our key to our relationship with Hashem. Avraham Avinu recognizes, hence the covenant part of my share here. Avraham Avinu, with everything that Avraham had, the thing that's mostly the Rabbeinu Bachya calls him Ohev Hashem. Ohev Hashem ve'ohev Abriyot. He had a relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He found Hashem and he had a relationship with Hashem. And that's why he was the ultimate cure of personality, because he loved Hashem and he loved people and he wanted people to connect Hashem in the way that he did, because it gave so much meaning to his life. And that's why Bet HaNefesh Arsu B'charon, he was able to do outreach in the top, you know, best way. He is the ultimate outreach person. Whenever I would run, you know, cure of programming back in the day before I was married, like, I would bring all these sources about Avraham Avinu. He's the person to learn from. Why are we doing this? Because we love people. We love Hashem. We want to, people to have the experience with the relationship with Hashem like we do. So Avraham Avinu recognized this. And Avraham Avinu is most known for his relationship with Hashem. And if you look in source number 6, Perek Tetvav, I think that is probably the most important Perek in all of Chumash. I know people can argue that with me, but it's Brisbane Hapsarim. It's basically the promise of eternal existence of the Jewish people. We would not be here if not for that parak. If Hashem didn't promise, you know, when we talk about Vihi She'amda Lavotenu, Vihi, this is what stood through it when everyone wants to destroy us, Vihi is that bracha that Hashem made to Avram at Bris Ben Avsarim, Perek Tetvav. So what's interesting is Hashem says to Avraham there, he tells him about, you know, that he's going to make him a great nation. He shows him the stars, and he says, "Go out there, you're going to be the father of a great nation." And by the way, the relationship with Hashem and the relationship with Eretz Israel go hand in hand. Should have said it to begin with. You know, we only hear about Avraham when he emerges, when Hashem says, "Lech lecha me'artzecha," I want you to leave. And not just, he's choosing Avraham because Avraham chose him, because they have a relationship, but I want you to go to the land, Asher Eka. And Avram picks up and goes. And this is, you know, the relationship with the Eretz Yisrael, with us and Eretz Israel and Hashem go hand in hand. And that's why a lot of the Mepharshim talk about this by Parshat Shlach, when Bnei Yisrael rejected Eretz Israel. So a lot of the Mepharshim, the Kenes Yitzchak says something so beautiful there. He's like, well, what does Hashem care? So why does he care so much? You know, so they rejected an amazing land. It's, you know, they're bad, you know. So it's bad for us that we were rejecting a land that Hashem wants to give us. But why does Hashem care so much? Because a rejection of Eretz Yisrael is a rejection of Hashem.
you know, this is important to Hashem. This is the land that Hashem wants to give us. And that's why Avram picked up and went. He didn't need any description of it. This is important to Hashem. Hashem wants to give him the land. He loves Hashem. And therefore he goes. You know, you're in a relationship and something's important to you. And the guy you're dating or the girl you're dating isn't interested in something that's really important to you. That's a red flag. You know, then what's the relationship? It's all about the relationship here. So Hashem says, I'm bringing you to this, I'm going to make you into a great nation. And I am Hashem Asher Otzeiticha Me'or Kazdim. I took you out of Or Kazdim. Latet lecha tzaret hazot l'mishta. To give you this land as an inheritance. And Avram's response, if you look at source number 6, is very strange. Hashem just made him this whole promise. And you're going to be the father of a great nation. You're going to inherit this land. And Avram's response is, Bameh Eda Ki Rashena. Wait one second, Hashem. How do I know that I'm going to inherit it? So right away, that question is a little bit strange. And all the Mefarshim ask about that. Like, Hashem just made him a promise. And Avram's saying, I don't believe you. Prove it. And not only that, but then Hashem's response is even stranger. By Yom Elav, okay, you want to know how? I want you to take these animals, these different types of animals, three cows, three rams, three goats, and two birds. And I want you to, it's very strange. And when you learn this at elementary school, I never knew what was going on here. It's like that they cut up animals, and you cut up the animals, and then the birds you keep whole, and he walks through them. And then the birds of prey came upon these, you know, dead animals. Avram chases them away. And Hashem says, okay, you know, and then Avram walks through, and the fire comes through. Avram's put into a deep sleep, and he's told about Shibud Mitzrayim, and he's, you know, whatever. And the rest, and then he promises Avram about the future of the Jewish people. But what's going on here? When Avram says, "Bameh eda ki irashena," what does that mean? How will I know? Like, I don't believe you? How do I know that they're going to inherit this land? And if you look at Rashi in number seven, so Rashi says, of course, he's not asking, Losha alo ot hazot. He's not saying, prove it, God, I don't believe you. Aval yushata aret sha'alo. And look at the last line. He says, Bame'ida, Losha alo ot, ela amar lefanav, hodieni be'ez zchut yitkaimuba. So it's not that Avram's saying, I don't believe you, Hashem. But what Avram's saying is, I chose you, Hashem. But what about my descendants? In what schut will they be able to inherit this land also? In what schut will they be able to have a relationship with you? What if they don't have a relationship with you like I do? And this is what Avram's concerned about. And Rashi's response is, Amar lo Kadosh Baruch Hu, bizchut ha-korbanot. Bizchut ha-korbanot. That's in the schut of korbanot, which we know, you know, the shorish is karav, brings us closer to Hashem. It's avoda, and if you look at Rashi, number 8, he talks about, you know, each of these animals represents a different karban. Again, you can look at number 8. Each one is remez l'shoshah parim, pariyom ha-kipurim, etc. All these animals represent different karbanot, and the whole purpose of karbanot is for us to have a relationship with Hashem. Again, now we have tefillah instead of karbanot. We don't have karbanot now, but it's avoda, and that purpose again, our tefillah is to have a relationship with Hashem. And that's what the point of the Karbanot were. And that's why Hashem's response, according to Rashi, when Avram says, how do I know that how are they going to be able to have a relationship with you? And Rashi's, and Hashem's answer to Avram is, Bizchut HaKarbanot. It's the Karbanot that they'll be able to have voda. I'm going to give them ways to connect to me. I just want to add a Rav Hirsch here. I didn't put in Rav Hirsch here, but Rav Hirsch has something very beautiful. And he makes the distinction between Yerusha and Nitina. Giving and inheriting. Because he says, up until now, what? This is new to Avram? Hashem already told Avram, I'm giving you this land. But what Hashem said to Avram before this was, Lacha etena ta'aretz hazot. I'm giving you this land. What's the difference between Netina and Yerusha? So you would think that Yerusha is like, oh, you just get it lands on your lap. You know, you have a great uncle who died and $5 million all of a sudden lands on your lap. That's not how Yerusha works, right? There's a relationship. Yerusha, Netina, you could give someone. You give someone a gift, you know, the person in the grocery store is nice, or the person who parks your car, it's not necessarily a relationship. Yerusha, there's a relationship. And by the way, sometimes you get something as a Yerusha, it's only important or meaningful to you because you have a relationship. So Avram's question, so that's why Rav Hirsch says, as soon as Hashem used the word Yerusha, that's when Avram got nervous. Oh wait, now you're saying Yerusha. It's not just Nitina, it's not just that you're giving me this land. We have to inherit it. Well, what if my kids don't want it? What if my descendants don't have a relationship with you? And that's why Avram is nervous here, if you will. And that's why Rashi says, no, don't worry, I'm going to give them a way to have a relationship with me. Bizchut ha-korbanot.
And then I threw in here, you know, Rashi, You know, it's important to note also, Vetat Zippor Lo Batar. You know, again, this is the promise of survival of the Jewish people. Says Rashi, why wasn't the bird cut up? Lefi Sha'umot Nimshalu L'Parim Be'elim V'Sirim. And he says the other nations are represented by the other animals represent the nations, and they're cut up along the way. They're divided. Remes Sheyu, look at the last line. Sheyu Ha'umot Kalim Ve'Ochim Vetat Zippor Lo Batar Remes Sheyu Yisrael Kayamin La'olam. And that's what the Bris Ben Havsarim, the symbolism behind it on the second page here, that the birds represent Bnei Yisrael. Again, I could do a whole share just on Bris Ben Havsarim. I'm not doing this justice. I wanted to just touch on this, that again, this is the beginning of the Jewish people and the promise of Jewish survival for eternity and existence, and it's all about the relationship with Hashem. It's all about that relationship. And that's why Bnei Yisrael will, you know, stay whole. The birds stay whole because Bnei Yisrael will, you know, will kayamin la'olam, will exist forever. And then the Ramban in number 10, with the birds of prey that come upon these animals to eat the cut up animals, Vayashevotam in Pasuk Bet, near Maslo, ki yavo hamim levatel hakarbanot, vizera Avraham yavrichun. That there will be nations along the way that will try to be mevatel the karbanot, and they'll try to get rid of that relationship we have with Hashem, and Avraham, the children of Avraham, will chase them away. That we're going to chase them away because that relationship is too important to us. And the Radak has some beautiful ideas here also. I'm not going to go through the whole Radak here, but he starts out by saying, what's cut up and what's not, that was all, because it doesn't look like Hashem is commanding him what to do, but Hashem told him to cut up the animals and leave the birds whole. And he says, "V'tama katuv li'nan habritz shekaratimo remez lo bazeh." Second line in number 11, "Shekol ha'umot ha'ela sheharu li'Yisrael kulam yiyu mechulakim u'mevutarim." They're all going to be divided. Everyone that comes up against us throughout our history is going to come up, is going to be divided. "V'yu le'ela kineged ela v'ilachamu zu bizu ad she'ichlu," and they're going to fight amongst themselves until they're destroyed. "V'chein yiyu mechulakim b'toratam b'munatam hizegro gorei masina," because they're all going to disagree with what their philosophy is and what their religion is. But v'lo yekein b'Yisrael, but it's not going to be the same with Bnei Yisrael, even though there were times that different Shvatim had difficulty with each other. At the end of the day, in the middle of this, right before Perek Bet, the last three lines before this, the Perek Bet, ki Yisrael mefuzarim b'galutz b'arba ruchot ha'shamayim v'heim la'am echad dveikim b'toratam b'munatam kulam mizrach ad marav Torah achat lahem. That what brings us together, what unifies us, is Torah. Because ultimately it's our relationship with Hashem, and that's why there's lots of ways to connect to Torah. There's not one size fits all. Nope, not at all. And there's many different ways to connect to Torah, and through connecting to Torah, you connect with Hashem, and that's why the birds remain whole. That's why we'll remain whole, because at the end of the day, it's one Torah. It's one people, and unfortunately, sometimes it takes something difficult for us to, you know, to remind us of that. And then if you look at the last couple lines here, he says, and then he continues, he says, "Lo shinu datam b'meitzar ha'galut v'gzerot ha'kashot." Everything we go through difficult things and difficult experiences, and we stay connected to, as long as we stay connected to Torah and connected to Hashem, then we will last forever. And then the last two lines, "Remez lo bazeh shibachol dar v'dar amot ha'olam omdim aleinu l'chaloteinu v'akadosh baruch hu matzileinu mi'adam b'zchut Avraham." Same idea, that people come and they try to destroy us, and it's that relationship with Hashem that they try to destroy, and we hold on to it, and that's why Bizchut Avraham, we will continue existing. One last thing about Bris Ben Havsarim before we get to the second point. So I just had to bring this Malbim. The Malbim says something so magnificent here, and it's very emotional. It certainly gives new meaning to me. I've taught this Malbim, you know, for many years before October 7th, and just very, very powerful. And again, this is the story of our history. It's just now so relevant right now with what we're going through. The Rambam says, Vayomer Elav in number 12, Vame'eda, right? When Avram asks, in how will I know that they're going to inherit it? He says, Be'ezes chut, right? Amar lo b'zchut ha'karbanot, right? We said this in Rashi. And what's chud? How do I know that my children are going to have, my descendants are going to have a relationship with Hashem? How are they going to have a relationship with Hashem? Says Rashi, b'zchut ha'karbanot, I'm going to give them ways to do avodah to have a relationship with Hashem. Says Ramban, it says the Malbim, Ratzal omar sh'zchut ma she'masarta la'hisareif al kvod shmi v'hu matmid b'karbanot. He says, basically, there's a lot more that the Malbim says. He says, karbanot,
it doesn't just mean like animal korbanot or avoda. It's bizchutz the korbanot,
like you, Avraham, the people who are willing to be moser nefesh for that relationship. That's how b'meidah ki rashana. That's why Bnei Israel exists forever. And it's really when you think about that, think about it. Think about it. And when I teach my students, I'm like, you're here because somebody in your family was moser nefesh, and it could be you. You know, and there's different types of Mesirut Nefesh. And it's Vladimir Lifshitz in Russia, who, by the way, 2 weeks after we got back, was arrested and sat in prison for a while, and then was only let out when communist Russia ended. But think of all the people throughout our history. And now, look at the Mesirut Nefesh. Look at the people, the young men and women and mothers and wives who are Moser Nefesh. It's like incomprehensible to us. You know, it's so inspiring. The level of Mesirut Nefesh for Eretz Yisrael, for our relationship with Hashem. It's mind-boggling. It's mind-boggling. And I know people always say, like, oh, it's the best guys. They're all the best guys. They're all the best guys. And the wives and the mothers. Bizchut ha-korbanot. Bizchut ha-korbanot. And that's how we're going to last forever. Because you have people willing to sacrifice for something that's so important to them, which is for the relationship with Hashem. So the last part of this, I just wanted to shift to Sefer Dvarim. Why? Because Sefer Dvarim is Moshe's, for all intents and purposes, Moshe's last lecture. Right? He's about to die. If anyone knows that book, The Last Lecture, Lahavdil. No, okay, whatever. I'm not going into that now. I'm running out of time. I did start late, though. So Moshe is about to die. It's like the last month of Moshe's life. And he is basically, you know, talking to the next generation, not the ones that were in Mitzrayim, this generation after I told you, but Midbar and Dvarim start the same way, just Dvarim is a generation later. And the next generation, first generation, died out. And Moshe is desperate to give over the most important messages that he needs to give them over before he dies. And what is that? Connection to Hashem. Relationship to Torah. And through Torah, relationship with Hashem. And that's the message in Sefer Dvarim. Yes, he goes through all the mitzvot. But at the end of the day, you know, if there's any famous pasuk, it probably comes from Dvarim. That comes from Chamishah Chumshei Torah, right? Because, and you know, you have such important first two paragraphs of Shema. You have so many things in Dvarim because Moshe is desperate that they maintain that relationship. Remember, you know, he's dying. He's not going to be able to be, you know, their Moshe Rabbeinu anymore. And he's passing it on to Yehoshua, but he wants to make sure that they stay connected to Hashem. And that's why so much of Dvarim is, you know, remembering what happened in the Midbar. Just the same way Hashem gave you man, you know, miraculously, and water miraculously in the Midbar, like when you go into Eretz Yisrael and you're going to get water from your wells and you're going to get food from your backyards, still know it's from Hashem. Hashem is still sustaining you. So it's all about that relationship, and he's desperate for that to make sure to strengthen that relationship. The Nitziv from Naftali Tzvi Yehuda Berlin, who wrote a tremendous parish called Ha'emek Davar, so talk about Hakdamot. He has a Hakdamot on every Sefer, which is phenomenal. Each one, I mean, I can't say each one is better than the next, because I think Breishit's my favorite, or Dvarim, I don't know. It's a close call. But he has an introduction to each of the Chamisha Chumshei Torah, and he explains a little bit in source number 13 here. He explains a little, this is his introduction to Sefer Dvarim. This is only a piece of it. I was like, it was hard for me to cut out, you know, parts of it to present to you today, because every single line of this is amazing. And he talks about what he does, what the Nitziv does. He, with each Sefer, he tells the name of a Sefer and then why it's called by that name, how it's thematically connected throughout the Sefer. So he says, Sefer Dvarim is called Mishnah Torah. It's a review of Torah. So most of the Mefarshim talk about how it's a review of Torah. And the Ramban has a whole thing. It's a review of Torah and nothing's new. And all the mitzvot that are mentioned in Dvarim, Moshe knew already and he's giving them over now. And there's a whole explanation as to why. So says the Nitziv, it's actually a little bit different. It's not just a review of Torah. He says that, V'zeh Sefer Nikra Mishnah Torah. He says, Perushu ube'or ad she'emid al dikduk lashon ha-Torah, to show a clear analysis of Torah, back to our, you know, my mashal with the text, like why it's so important to analyze every single word, because this is going to connect us to Hashem. I really don't have time to go through the whole thing. You should look at it. But he says, Here, I'll just do a couple more lines. Umishum dechlal ze hasefer vikaro ba lehasir al amel haTorah lefaresh titukei hamikra vezet Talmud Torah vezet Talmud. He says the objective, the main theme and objective of this book is to exhort us in the study of Torah and to analyze the nuances of Torah because that's how we connect to Hashem. V'chol hamusev raboy dvarim shehi Moshe Rabbeinu mochicham hakol ba lezet tachlit. Everything that Moshe has been telling us in the entire Torah and all the review of Torah and all the 613 mitzvot, it comes down to this point. How we can connect to Hashem. It brings us closer to Hashem. Sheikablu al atzmam ol ha-talmud mipnei kama ikarim sheyavohu beguf ha-sefer. He says, because it brings, it should lead us to, you know, the yoke of learning Torah, because ultimately, you know, to achieve the goal of accepting the yoke of Torah and understanding the main ideas, because that's what's going to connect us to Hashem. There's so much more to say here, but let's just skip to the end. He says, "Ve'or ze ha'sefer yehi ner l'raglo." May this book be a guiding light for us to walk upright in worldly affairs and draw on the relationship with Hashem to get through life, basically. Omnam rosh v'sof ha'tochcha shebaze ha'sefer hu al ha'chazaka ha'chukim ha'mishpatim shu ha'talmud b'Yisrael. And he said that's why there's so much, you know, reiteration of the mitzvot to strengthen our learning. Asher mimenu totzaot chayei ha'uma v'yadut bichlal. Because our learning, our connection to Torah affects the survival of the entire Jewish people. And yahadut bichlal, and Judaism. I mean, this is what he's saying. That's why you have to learn Torah. V'al zenich ha'tabrit ha'sheni. This is why he's giving them the Torah again to this generation. La'kim et divrei ha'Torah. U'imenu yateru panah, last couple lines. He says, the Torah learning yields people of ethics and eminence. V'hein mi shezacha l'Torah v'amala, hein mi, second to last line in the bottom of this page, hein mi shebarchu Hashem l'achazika b'kiyuma v'kalkala. I love that he says that. Those who are learning and those who can support people learning. And those who can teach people Torah. Like whatever level you can to connect to Torah, you have to connect to Torah, because connecting to Torah means that you're connecting to Hashem, which is the secret for survival of the Jewish people. V'al zeh nikra zeh seh sefer Mishnah Torah, l'shanan charva u'lehashiv milchamta shel Torah shara. How he says this, he says that basically Mishnah Torah is the sharpening of the sword of Torah to repel and fight against the attacks on the gates of the Beit Midrash, and may this be our strength, he says. U'bazeh tihilanu oz ve'ora. It's unbelievable. Again, I've learned this before October 7th, but it comes on with a whole new meaning that there are people that will come and try to get in the way of our relationship with Hashem and our relationship with Torah. And we have to keep it going, because this is going to be to help us, you know, protect the gates, you know, protect our relationship with Hashem and protect us and keep us in existence. And that's why Moshe, throughout Sefer Dvarim, we're going to have to skip around a little bit here, but that's why Moshe, throughout Sefer Dvarim, talks about this idea that, you know, it comes back to this idea. If you look at source number 14, he starts by saying, before, again, it's Mishnah Torah, and Perek Hay, the beginning of the first four prakim in Dvarim, Moshe is just digressing a little bit, or a lot, four prakim worth, and telling this generation what went on, the previous generation, why they're all still here. And then he starts the Mishnah Torah part, the review of Torah part in Parakeh, which is Matan Torah part two, you know, the second giving of the Torah. And he says, and what does he say? Vayikrama shal kol Yisrael. And he says, Vayomar lehem shma Yisrael tachukim et mashpitim asher anochi dover be'oznechem hayom ulemaratam otam ushmartam lasotam. A big theme in Dvarim is limud amanat lasot, right? We don't just learn for the sake of learning. There's a higher purpose to keep mitzvot, to have a relationship with Hashem. I always tell my students, you know, you could take a Bible class in any university out there. And what's the big difference between taking one at Stern College, Yeshiva University, and taking one elsewhere? Lilmud omanat lasot. There's a higher purpose. It's not just an intellectual exercise. It is, of course, and it should be. But there's a higher purpose, which is for us to connect to Hashem. And that makes it apples and oranges. So what does he say? Lo atavotechem karat Hashem et habrit hazot, ki itanu anachnu elapo hayom kulanu chayim. that it's ours. You're giving, it's not just your parents that got this, that got the Torah back on Har Sinai back 38 and a half years ago, but it's you today also. You have this Yerusha also. It's all about the relationship with Hashem. Kulanu Chayim. Make your lives meaningful. Live. And it doesn't just mean physically living, but living in a meaningfully uplifting life. And we see, I told you in Dvarim, you know, we have the first paragraph, we have a lot of things in Dvarim, but in Rashi number 15, Vayu Adrim Ha'ila, in Shema, Umau Ava, Behavtat Hashem Elokecha, where does that love come from? Vayu Adrim Ha'ila, Shemitoch Kachata Makir Ba'Kadosh Baruch Hu Medabek V'drachav. It's through learning. It's through Torah. It's through v'shinantam levanecha v'dibartabam. That's how you come to the Ahavat Hashem. That's how you have a relationship with Hashem. Connect Him through learning. And Moshe continues. This is one of my favorite psukim, not just in Dvarim, in all of Torah, in source number 16. When Moshe turns to Bnei Israel and he's just given over the Sefer Dibros for the second time, and we talked about how the Nitziv talks about what Mishnah Torah means. It's not just a review of Torah. He says, "V'atah Yisrael, ma Hashem alkecha sha'al meimcha meimach." And now, Bnei Israel, what does Hashem ask of you? Ki im li yirat Hashem alkecha lalechet b'chol drachav la'ava oto lavodet Hashem alkecha b'chol lavcha b'chol nafshecha lishmart mitzvot Hashem v'tchukotav asher anochi mitzavcha yom letov lach. Running out of breath. It's not really a run-on. It's just a lot of stuff. What does Hashem ask of you? Only to fear Him, to love Him, to walk in His ways, to love Him, to love Hashem with all your heart and all your soul, to follow the mitzvos and the chukim that I command to you, letov lach. And of course, every parish there asks, and I brought this in, first of all, Rashi, I should bring in Rashi first, it's a famous Rashi, number 17. He says, first of all, v'ata Yisrael, what do you mean, and now Yisrael? Afal pish asitem kol zot. He just went through all the things that they did wrong, including the last thing he mentions, you know, before this pasuk, which is Chet HaEgel. He got the Torah, and right away they did Chet HaEgel. All these sins, odenu rachama v'chibato alechem. He still loves us. He still loves you. He wants a relationship with you. U'mikom ha'shechatatu levanav, enu sha'omikem ki'im li'ira. The only thing Hashem is asking you, not why'd you do this, but can you have a relationship with me? And that's why Shoel and Rashi says, this is the famous part of the Rashi, Rabakim le'yirav, Rabatenu darshu mikana kobi de shamayim chutz mirat shamayim. Everything is up to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, except for our relationship with Him. And that's all He asks of us. And that's what Moshe is saying. And of course, you know, the way that Moshe says it, if you look at the Gemara in Brachos, V'atah Yisrael ma'asham al-kachal sh'ol mimcha, kim le'yiratu yirat shamayim milta zutartahi. You know, the way Moshe says it, what does Hashem ask of you? Only to, you know, dedicate your life 24-7 to God. Like, how does He even say it like that? Is it a small thing, says the Gemara in Brachos? So the Gemara in Brachos answers, in Legabe Moshe, Milta Zutartahi. So it's an interesting answer. I never totally love this answer, although it is pshat for sure. I mean, it seems, you know, yes, but to Moshe, it's a small thing. And that's why the Gemara continues. Amar Rabbi Chanina, mashal adam shemvakshim imeno kikli gadol, v'yesh lo domel al kikatan, katan v'ein lo domel al kikadol. If you have it, it's not a big thing. It's like a rich man saying to a poor man, it's just $1,000. You know, what's the biggie? No biggie. For the poor man, it's a lot of money. So it's an interesting answer in the Gemara, because what was Moshe so insensitive to Bnei Israel that it's like insensitive for a rich man to say that to a poor man if he knows he can't do it. But I think if you understand Moshe being Isha Nav Mikol Adam, that's not a small statement, that he was the most humble man that walked the face of the earth. So maybe he really didn't realize, you know, the difference between him and Bnei Israel. I want to suggest another possible explanation of this. Maybe I'm just throwing this out there. Legabe Moshe, Milta Sudasa. What does legabe mean? When you're standing with Moshe, when you're in the presence of someone like Moshe Rabbeinu, legabe agaba is next, right? Then Milta Zutartahi. You know, then when you're standing with someone like this, like, it's so inspiring, so it doesn't seem like a big deal. And this is something that you want to do. I have a story of one of my Machina students. It's just, they're so incredible. I had a girl who came with mamish no background last year, and she came on the camp. We have a camp Shabbaton, and we had this amazing kumzitz Friday night. And we had about 250 students at the camp Shabbaton, about 100, a little over 100 of them were sitting around Friday night, you know, because of course the lights went off in the middle, so in the Chadar Ochel in Camp Dor Golding. We were singing. It was like a week before Rosh Hashanah. So anyway, it was amazing. We went on for 2 hours. I went just to pop in, and I ended up staying until 2 a.m. It was so magnificent, so beautiful and uplifting. And this girl, but most of the Machina students weren't there. They don't, you know, they're not the ones who generally participate in these things. And I walked down, and I see her outside, and she's crying. And I walked over to her, and I said, Jen, were you just in that room? It was like 2 o'clock in the morning. And she said to me, yes. And I said, are you okay? And she said, Mrs. Schechter, she had just gotten to Stern. She said, I don't know what just went on in that room. She said, I've never experienced anything like this. I don't know the songs. I don't know Hebrew. I don't know what they were singing. I don't know anything about what happened there. People are walking out saying, great kumza. I never heard that word. I don't know what they're talking about. She said, all I know is that in this day and age, I was sitting in a room on a Friday night with 100 college students in the dark, without boys, without alcohol, without their cell phones, singing because they wanted to connect to God, to the creator of the world. I don't know what that was. I've never experienced it, but I want to be part of it. This is why I'm here. That's what it means. Lagabi Moshe, and the teachers, and the rabbanim, and the mechanchot. When you're surrounded by Lagabi Moshe, when you're surrounded by people like inspiring, who have this relationship with Hashem, who emulate it, who live it, then Milta Zutartahi. Then, yeah, you know? And then continuing on, the pasuk says, Ramban focuses on the last part of the pasuk. You know, Latovlach says the Ramban, Mashem al-Kach sho'el meimcha nimshach el-Latovlach. You have to look at the last part. Yomar einenu sho'el meimcha davar sheyetz letzorcho, ela letzorchecha. Ketam, he says, it's not like Hashem is asking you something that he needs, but it's good for us. Ki l'Hashem al-Kach ha-shamayim u'shmei ha-shamayim v'chol asher ba v'chulam notzim kavod l'shmo. Everybody gives kavod to Hashem. Einenu tzarich lacha, rak bevotecha chashak, b'yifchar b'zarama chareihem. Mikol Hamim, Hashem chose us from all the other nations. Shatem Mivchar Zaram, Velo Bishmael, Velo Be'esav. Hashem chose us. So that's what Latovlach means. At the end of the day, yes, it's dedicating your life 24/7 to Hashem, but the ultimate reward is Latovlach. I don't have time. I did start late. I'm just finishing up here. I don't have time to go through the Sefer Yikarim. Maybe Yosef Albo has a beautiful explanation about this. And just to sum it up, look at it on your own. I don't have time to go through it. But he says basically, you know, the to achieve relationship with the creator of the world is that's like impossible. You know, go here, live your life, connect to God, make your life meaningful. Like, how do you even do that? So what Hashem gives us is a 613-step recipe. If we do these steps, then we can do it. Then you're not so overwhelmed. I mean, it might be overwhelming, but at least the reward, you know, I think here's a good example. You go to the doctor and the doctor says to you, you know, you need to be healthier. You're 30 pounds overweight. You need to eat only healthy foods. Don't eat things that are bad for you. All you have to do is eat healthy foods and exercise daily and get, you know, regular checkups. And, you know, that's all you need to do. And you walk out like, what do you mean that's all I need to do? Okay? Well, that's all you need to do because it's effortful. Nobody ever said that it's not effortful. It's just follow these instructions. And even though it's hard and it's effortful, the reward is great. You'll be healthier. You'll live longer. You'll have more energy, right? You'll live to see grandchildren, great grandchildren. So that's the idea here. At the end of the day, no one's saying it's not effortful. It is effortful to have a relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But at the end of the day, Latovlach, we live meaningful lives. Everybody in this world is trying to find meaning in their lives. Like, we have this secret. We have a 613-step recipe for a secret meaningful life, for a meaningful existence. So that's the idea. And then just to finish, so Moshe comes back at the end of Dvarim in 21. He says the same thing that he said at the beginning. Lo itchem levatchem anochi koreit et habrit hazot ve et halah hazot. The same way I told you at the beginning of the Sefer, when I started, don't think it's just your parents who have this gift of a relationship of Torah to connect to Hashem. It's also for you. He says at the end of the Sefer, guess what? It's not just for you. It's also for your children and your descendants. Ki asher yeshno po imanu omed hayom lifnei Hashem ve'et asher einenu po hayom imanu. And it's you who's here and it's the people who aren't here and it's all future descendants. And then he ends in Nitzavim, almost at the end here, Nitzavim, which is also beautiful and famous pasuk. He says, "Ki mitzvah zot asher nochi mitzavcha yom." And the question is, what's mitzvah zot? According to most of the Mepharshim, not all. It's not just tshuva; it's all the Torah. Lo nifleitu mecha velo rechokah, lo b'shamayim hi leimor mi alenu lanu b'shamayim v'yikachel lanu, etc. Don't think it's up in heaven. Don't think it's inaccessible. Don't think that this Torah, this connection to Hashem is inaccessible to you. But it's very close to you. You got this. You have this. That's how Moshe ends the Sefer. And if you look at the Gemara in Erevin in number 3, what does Rava say? What do you mean, kikarove lacha? How is this close? 3 words, says Rava. Asei moadim latorah. Make time to learn. Hashem is giving us a way to connect to Him. Make time to learn. Make time to learn. And that's what everybody, that's how we draw our strength. That's why you're here on a Monday morning when you have a day off from work and you're coming to make time to learn. This is what we do. This is how we connect to Hashem. And I just wanted to end with Moshe's final message to Bnei Israel in Sefer Dvarim. And Moshe reflects on how grateful we are to have this, to have Torah as a way to connect to Hashem. And it's really, it's amazing. I mean, Moshe's not going, there are two times that I cry when I'm teaching. One is not even in Shlach, when Bnei Yisrael are punished, when Moshe's punished, and he can't go into Eretz Yisrael and Parshat Chukah. And then the other one is at the end, when Moshe dies at the end, then he couldn't even go into Eretz Yisrael. In fact, I was sitting next to my Rebbetzin last year on Simchas Torah, and I'm like already getting emotional as Moshe's about to die. And she looks at me, she says, "Are you okay?" And I'm like, "No." She's like, "What happened?" I'm like, "He died." And she's like, "Who?" And I'm like, "Moshe." And she's like, "Moshe who?" And I'm like, "Rabbeinu." And she says, "Didn't you see that coming?" I'm like, okay, but it's still emotional, you know? And especially because he couldn't go into Eretz Yisrael. And what does he say? The last words out of Moshe Rabbeinu's mouth. Look at number 24. So he talks about Ba'ishkon Yisrael Betach, and I added this line, that Bnei Yisrael will dwell in security and solitary, like Yaakov, you know, El Eretz Agan V'Tirosh, Af Shamav Yar Putal, that even the Shamayim will drip with dew. You know, you'll live very comfortably and with shalom. And how does he end? The last words out of his mouth, he's not going into Eretz Yisrael because Bnei Yisrael messed up. And his dream to go into Eretz Yisrael is not happening, and he's dying. And what does he say? Ashrecha Yisrael. How lucky you are. How fortunate are you, Bnei Yisrael. Mi kamocha am nosha b'shem, magen ezrecha, v'asher cherev gavatecha, v'chachashu oivecha lecha, v'ata b'motemo tidroch. Fortunate are you, Bnei Yisrael. Who is like you? Mi kamcha Yisrael, mi kamocha am. People delivered by Hashem, the shield of your help, the sword of your greatness. Your enemies will try to destroy you, but you'll trample them. They're haughty ones. You'll trample them. And you'll trample them because of this relationship that we have with Hashem. Because, like the Maalid says, bizchut ha-korbanot, not just the animal korbanot, the people who are willing to be moser nefesh for this relationship, for the relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, for the relationship with Eretz Yisrael. And says, Rashi, Ashrecha Yisrael, achar sheparat lahem habrachot, amar lahem, mali lifrot lachem kol davar. Moshe finished going through all the brachos of all the shvatim at the end of Dvarim, and he says, what more can I give, can I tell you? Hakol shelachem, it's all yours. All I can say is, Ashrecha mi kamocha teshuatcha. You're just so lucky. Just, you're so fortunate that you have a relationship with Hashem, that you have Torah, and you have a way to connect with the creator of the universe. And I just would be remiss if I didn't say the last line in the Torah, because we started with the first Rashis. I just want to end with the last Rashi. Last Rashi of the Torah. Then Moshe dies, and there's a whole discussion about who wrote the last few psukim after he dies. The last pasuk of the Torah, number 26. L'chol ha'tov ha'moptim asher shlachol Hashem la'asot be'eretz Mitzrayim l'paro l'chol ha'vedav l'chol ha'arto u'l'chol ha'yad ha'chazaka u'l'chol ha'mareh ha'gadol asher asah Moshe la'enei kol Yisrael. All these things that Moshe did in front of the eyes of all the Jewish people, he brought Hashem, he introduced Hashem to Bnei Yisrael, to the world. And what does Rashi say? La'enei kol Yisrael. He says, first of all, l'chol ha'yad ha'chazaka she'bikibel et ha'torah b'l'chot b'yadav. He brought the luchos to Bnei Yisrael. And how does he end? Le'inei kol Yisrael, last Rashi of Chamisha Chumshei Torah, she'nesa'o libo lishbor haluchot le'ineim, she'nemar bashbreim le'ineichem, ve'hiskima data kadosh baruch hu le'dato, she'nemar sher shibarta, yasha koach sher shibarta. End of the Torah. What did you do in front of all Bnei Yisrael? You broke those luchos. And I want you to know, yasha koach, that you broke those luchos. Seriously? This is how you're ending? And by the way, it's not so pushed whether it was good that the luchos were broken. It was not, you know, there's a whole lot of discussion about that. That's how Rashi is choosing to end. But I think there's such a profound understanding of that. The same way we started with the first Rashi of every day, the introduction of Rashi to Chamisha Chumshei Torah is Hashem's love for Bnei Israel. This is the last Rashi also. The last Rashi, what do you mean, Yashkoch Sheshibarta? So first of all, Moshe broke the luchos. It's a discussion. He broke the luchos because they were going after the Egel. So the luchos without the relationship with Hashem is stones that can be broken. And that's how we understand Moshe breaking them. If you don't have that relationship backing up Torah, then it's a bunch of rock. But I think there's also a message here that even though these luchos were broken, that the luchos that Hashem carved out were broken, the relationship is still there. And that's why Le'nei Kol Yisrael, what did he show Bnei Israel? You can continue. You can continue. And there's a lot of Torah after that. And you continue and you have a relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And yeah, they messed up big time. And that's why he starts Dvarim that way. But Hashem loves us so much that we continue, we forge on. As long as we maintain the relationship, and as long as we stay connected to Torah, and we stay connected to Hashem, then we can survive everything.
You taught them the lesson that our relationship transcends with Hashem, transcends everything, whatever happens. And that's what we have to hold on to. And that's what Moshe says, Ashrecha Yisrael, how fortunate you are, B'nai Yisrael, that this is what you have. So my bracha is that we, as we go through these hard times, we can draw strength and inspiration from Torah, from that relationship with Hashem, and we should see a Yeshua Shleima Bekarov. Thank you for learning with me today. Sorry for going a little over.
Thank you very much, Professor Schechter. That was truly an inspiring share.
Ladies and gentlemen, we're going to take a quick 5-minute break. There's coffee and breakfast outside.